the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, they say the 2020 elections could be one of the key elections that we've seen for a presidential race in decades. There's a lot at stake here, different viewpoints, different philosophies. Joining us on the program is Professor Mulligan. He's a professor of economics at the University of Chicago. He's also the author of the book, You're Hired, Untold Successes and Failures of a Populist President. Casey Mulligan joins us now. Casey, let's talk about the Biden plan because it's not getting enough attention in the press. We already know what the president's plan is. We're living with it right now. But let's talk about the Biden plan and how that is in sharp contrast to what we have in place today.
Yeah, let me say it's an ambitious plan. He wants to get more tax revenue from the owners of businesses. He also wants to make Obamacare more generous, and that's going to, it is a hidden tax on work that he has planned, just like the original Obamacare was. And then he has a whole suite of regulatory ideas that would harm businesses and consumers, especially lower income consumers who spend a lot of their money on a big fraction of their budget on housing, on energy, internet, things like that, that would be heavily regulated.
As I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, he would repeal the Trump tax cuts for Americans who are earning a certain level of income. I think his figure is, what, $400,000?
Yes.
Okay, so if you repeal the Trump tax cuts, you go back to the 39.6% tax rate from 37. That doesn't sound like much. But that's assuming he keeps them at 39.6. It's not quite clear. Maybe you've read more information. Is he going to raise the top marginal tax rates from where they were under Obama at 39.6? I mean, it looks like he's going to do that.
Well, the kind of headline rate, he's not talking about raising, but he would in a more hidden way by phasing out the deductions for higher income earners. They would have an extra rate kind of on top of that 39.6 as they lost their deductions by earning more.
Well, I mean, if we take, let's just say we go back to 39.6, we'll just round it off for illustration purposes at 40%. He also wants to take the cap off earned income for Social Security taxes. So if I'm fortunate enough to make $400,000 or more, in addition to the 40% federal tax, I could add 15.3% Social Security tax. So that's, what, 55% plus. And then if you live in a state like California, which has just passed an assembly bill to raise the tax rates to 16.8, Professor, that's, you're asking a small businessman to pay 70% and over of his earnings in the form of federal and state taxes. How's business going to survive or thrive in that kind of environment? I just don't see it.
Yeah, it won't survive and thrive. When you tax something, you get less of it, and there will be less businesses, fewer of them, and those that are there tend to be smaller. I expect from the tax part of his plan, putting in the regulatory parts aside, maybe 10% less business under a Biden tax plan because of for some of the reasons that you've kind of stepped through the arithmetic.
So, Professor, when people are taxed heavily like that, and I think of the Great Depression when, you know, tax rates got as high as 94%. Of course, there were a lot more ways to shelter income back then. But people take evasive action, whether it's Joe Kennedy liquidating his holdings and putting it in tax-free bonds or Bernard Baruch and gold. Wealthy people just don't sit there and say, okay, I'm just going to pay the tax. They take evasive action. So doesn't this get back to the point that when you raise taxes, you actually get less of it because you get lower economic activity? And then wealthy people, in order to avoid paying the tax, take evasive action.
Yeah, he would not get much revenue from this and might maybe negative revenue, like you said. He claims that he's going to fight against loopholes. We don't have a lot of detail there. But regardless, he won't get as much revenue. And actually, the state governments will take a big hit because as people try to evade federal taxes, they more or less automatically are avoiding state taxes. So California will find that its revenue will go down even if it doesn't change its rates.
Yeah, because, one of the comments, we deal with tax planning all the time. Maybe you can't control your federal taxes as much, but if you live in a high tax state like I do in California, the highest taxes in the country, and they're talking about making them higher, what you can do is control that. You can just simply move. You can go to Nevada, Arizona, Texas, Montana, Tennessee, Florida. You can go someplace else where the taxes are lower or non-existent.
Yeah, we've already seen that pattern. Actually, it's a pattern that's accelerated this year as, the health situation has got people up and moving anyway. They've decided, well, maybe I'll stop when I reach Florida or a state like that.
So in addition to raising taxes on businesses, small businesses, let's talk about some of the hidden taxes. Now, you mentioned or alluded to that he would expand Obamacare and it would be offered to more people. But obviously, as we saw with Obamacare, it costs money. Whether it was the mandates, if you didn't have insurance, you would either have to pay a tax or buy it. And if you bought it, you had to pay a lot of money. And the deductible was huge, so most people didn't benefit from it.
Yeah, the Obamacare has not gone well. There's not a lot of happy customers, and it's caused a lot of distortion. And small businesses keeping their employment below 50 to try to avoid some of those problems, and people aren't happy with the insurance. But Biden wants to, President Trump's tried to improve that. He got rid of the individual mandate. He's very proud of that. Just bragged about it yesterday. But Biden promises to bring the individual mandate back and throw more money at Obamacare. Biden doesn't think Obamacare is generous enough and we should spend more money on it.
Now, let's talk about something else that costs money and it weighs on business tremendously. And we as consumers end up paying for it. And that's the cost of regulation. He's talking about all kinds of new regulation coming in. And then also what he would do to the energy industry. I mean, one of the nice things that we have as consumers right now is the cost of gasoline is down. It's down tremendously, so it costs less to drive or go on vacation. He would change that.
He has some very ambitious plans for energy. He wants to make all cars electric. So there'll be a huge increase in the demand for electricity when we need electricity not only for our microwave, but we need it for our car that drives places. Huge increase in demand for electricity. At the same time, he wants to cut out most of the ways that we make electricity, whether it be natural gas, coal, petroleum. None of those fossil fuels are allowed under a Biden plan. So you cut back on the supply and you way increase the demand. That's not going to be pretty. Maybe the folks in California are familiar with kind of a smaller version of that gap between demand and supply with the brownouts and things like that. But that's something most of America is not familiar with, but they will be if he's going to pursue that two-pronged plan of cutting supply and increasing demand.
Well, California is doing the same thing. Our governor yesterday just passed a law that beginning in 2035, you will not be able to sell combustion engines in California. The problem is, Professor, California shut down its two nuclear power plants, and we're ending up buying electricity from two nuclear power plants in Arizona. And if we go all green, which means at night, instead of your car being turned off in your garage, it's going to be plugged into the grid charging. Where's all the electricity going to come from to power all this?
Yeah, it's going to be very expensive to try to build out so-called renewable sources of electricity at such a scale. You're going to have to increase an order of magnitude the amount of renewable energy we have. And then to make it reliable, one of the reasons why the windmills they have in Oakland that they can be helpful is because they have natural gas to back them up on the low wind days. But natural gas is not going to be allowed. So I don't really see how that's going to function without throwing really a historical amount of money at it, something that would matter very much in the aggregate, even though electricity is just one of many industries in our economy. It's going to need so much help that it'll really drag down the entire economy, not just that industry.
Yeah, because you can, and California has already discovered this, as many of our residents know, you can't run the state's electrical grid on solar and wind. Some days the wind doesn't blow, and some days it's just not sunny. I don't know how we're going to make that transition, especially if you go after the fossil fuel industry, whether it's oil or natural gas, and you're not building any more nuclear power plants. Let's talk about the Biden plan when we're talking about taxes. It's going after, in his mind, I don't know why they picked the $400,000 level. Maybe that's just above congressional salaries. But they're looking at $400,000. What about people in the lower tax brackets? How do they fare under a Biden plan?
You know, they're going to be hit in a couple ways. One would be the regulation. The regulations apply to everyone. You know, that when we make electricity expensive, just because you earn less than $400K is not going to give you out of jail card on that. You're going to pay a lot for your electricity if it's available, and you're going to pay more for other items that get regulated. And that tends to be the pattern of regulation, really, to be kind of blunt. Regulation is a way that higher income people can indulge their preferences and force others to live the way that they do with the priorities that they have. So that's one way that people below 400K, especially people below 50K, would pay. We saw that with the individual mandate. That individual mandate for Obamacare was paid almost exclusively by people earning less than 50K. So regulation would be the biggest. The second thing that would happen and would accumulate over the years would be when there's fewer businesses, there's going to be less demand for workers. And that'll result in the short run, that'll result in less jobs. In the long run, it'll just result in lower wages because wages ultimately are tied to productivity. And it's hard to be productive when you don't have the equipment, the structures, and the freedom to do business without micromanagement from the regulators. You won't have that productivity, and therefore cannot sustain higher wages that a productive economy can.
And what about the issue, you know, even if we want to go towards EVs, a more greener economy, we're still going to need oil and gas in the transition. You still have semi-trucks, trains, ships. The way we transport goods around the world, or even, let's say, travel via airplane, it still runs on fossil fuels. I mean, I may be wrong, but I just don't see them putting a 787 Dreamliner up in the air with solar panels.
Yeah, as far as I know, Biden does not plan to eliminate airplanes. So one of the problems you get into is that when you outlaw, and this is the problem with central planning in general, but if you're going to be micromanaging energy and transportation, and you say, okay, you can't use a gasoline-driven car anymore, then more things will go by train and plane, and then it might end up burning more fossil fuels, and so you won't even get your environmental justice that you're shooting for by putting on all these regulations. So the micromanaging regulatory approach to this is I find it really hard to justify, because what it costs us consumers and regular people doesn't drive us toward even the advertised objective.
So why do you think Wall Street hasn't made much more of this? Obviously, those kind of tax rates would be bad for Wall Street, because a lot of those guys on Wall Street make the big bucks. And I would think that, you know, a lot of like the Chamber of Commerce, taking a look at small businesses, that there is more voices saying that, hey, this would not be good for the economy. Now, let me ask you this. President Obama ran on Obamacare and raising tax rates, but he was smart enough, Professor, during his first term, when we were coming out of a deep recession and financial crisis, he did not raise taxes his first term. He waited to his second term. Would Biden be smart enough to do the same thing? In other words, if we have high unemployment, as we do now because of COVID, the economy is requiring more stimulus, would Biden maybe perhaps wait till the economy got on its feet before he hit it with regulations and devastating taxes?
You know, I haven't heard him say provide a lot of detail on the timing. He does give a lot of detail, more detail on his regulatory agenda. And there he does try to kick the can down the road. So he's not going to say tomorrow we have electric cars. He has, you know, a multi-decade glide path for that. And so it wouldn't surprise me if on taxes he would do the same. And I think probably one of the reasons why Wall Street doesn't appear very worried right now is that they see these as promises and not promises made, but promises that won't be kept. They maybe detect that they will have a strong influence in the administration and they can talk them out of some of these campaign promises. And so end up with promises that'll be kept are the ones that kind of hurt the little guy, because the little guy doesn't really have a voice in these affairs once November 3rd is done.
You know, that's absolutely amazing, because when you take a look at the consequences of some of these decisions, and then also, you know, things that you tell the voters in an election year you're going to do, and then what you don't do afterwards. I just couldn't imagine, Professor, with the unemployment rate as high as it is, with so many businesses being shut down or quarantined, as my own state of California is, that you would be somewhat reluctant to raise taxes because there's a congressional election 2 years later. And we saw what happened with the unpopularity of Obamacare. The Democrats lost Congress. So wouldn't there be a political risk if you did something that really tanked the economy, you would pay for it in the next election?
That's right. And I'm sure there's enough people in Biden's team to remember what happened during the Obama years.
So given all this, what do you recommend investors do? Just sit back and just wait for the outcome? Start maybe doing some tax planning? Because I just have a feeling, Professor, when we take a look at the debt, the deficits, that down the road, whether it's the president that comes after this election or the one after that, that sooner or later taxes are going to be going up.
But maybe I'm a little more optimistic. You know, I look at Europeans. They, although they have a reputation of really taxing the high income people, they really haven't. They tried it for a period of time, and they backed off pretty quick. Things like wealth taxes, or even taxes on the higher incomes. You see, a place like Sweden or Denmark, they had cut a number of those taxes after experimenting with them. So I view as kind of a relatively bad case scenario would be that we try these things, but then back off. I don't, given that other countries haven't made it a permanent way of life, I don't see us making it a permanent way of life, despite what the politicians may say.
All right. Well, there's certainly a lot to look at and think about when November 3rd comes around. Professor, as we close, you want to tell our listeners about your book, You're Hired?
Yeah, I got the privilege of working in the White House during an academic year off. And what I saw there was completely different from what's shown on TV or talked about in the newspaper. And I thought, you know, Americans, this is their house and they deserve to know what's going on in here. And so I provided stories about, especially the president, who was a very interesting person. Love him or hate him, he's definitely interesting. He's got a lot interesting to say. And I give a firsthand account of what he's doing. And he's had a lot of successes that you don't hear about. He has some failures you don't hear about either. It's funny, the gap between what's really happening there and what gets discussed is not the gap, it's a gulf. And I just hopeful that people will have an opportunity to really enjoy the true stories about him. And I've noticed that people finish the book in a day or two because they start to read it and they see, wow, this is, a lot of things are making sense now that I know what really happened. And it's a fun read.
Yeah, and I highly recommend it because there's a lot that people aren't told about in the news, and the news is somewhat biased. Well, Professor, I want to thank you for coming on the program. We've been speaking with Professor Casey Mulligan. He's written a book called You're Hired, Untold Successes and Failures of a Populist President. Professor, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.